Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, Saskatchewan's Minister of Agriculture is seeking another meeting with his federal and provincial counterparts to discuss agri-stability. This after just yesterday, Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau called on all the provinces to get on board with changes to agri-stability that would be retroactive to last year. The North American wheat market outlook for the rest of the crop year is positive, due in part to a Russian wheat export tax and quota designed to curb domestic food inflation. We'll hear from Marlena Borsch, who is a market analyst with Mercantile Venture Consulting. Studying your yield and your cereal crop protein content from this past harvest can help you determine your nutrient plan for this coming crop season. We'll hear from retired Yorkton agronomist Tom Weir on that. Yesterday's launch of Climate West signals another opportunity for people on the prairies to access supports related to climate change. We'll hear from Terry Duguid with the Government of Canada on that. All of that and much, much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, very strong gusty winds here in the Parkland region. Will this last for much longer today?
The wind likely will be slowly diminishing, but it is going to be a slow process, which means even as we lose some of these higher gusts, we've seen them over 80 at times already, even as you start to lose the 70, which will come a couple of hours from now, we'll still have 60, and then we'll lose the 60, we'll still have 50. So it's still going to be quite breezy, if not quite as windy, right into at least most of tonight. By tomorrow morning, we're down to a lighter wind at least, 20 to 40, and then during the day tomorrow, it will continue to diminish, not becoming calm. I don't see a calm wind until later tomorrow night. So at least the next 36 hours or so, we're pretty breezy. Temperature is on the way down. It's just like the wind coming down. It's a slow process. The storm system that's driving the wind is sitting off to our north. It's cleared. It's gone. It's actually pushing into western Ontario now. But the front itself, the actual cold air with this front, is still sitting just to our north, and that has to drop through during the afternoon. That's what's going to start the wind dropping, but it's also going to bring in the cooler air. While we're waiting on it, the temperature has not been in a hurry to fall. It's actually rebounded a bit. We're talking tenths of a degree. We've been pretty steady for the last 6 or 7 hours now, but we're going to be very slowly falling. I'm thinking -3 by the end of the day. And for areas especially south and east of Yorkton, not even going to get there. We're going to just hold pretty steady. But as the cold air builds in, Yorkton immediate area, areas north will start to get into that cool down. And then as the front drops through tonight, we fall down to -12. What we don't have much of is precipitation. We had a little snow with the system coming through, even some rain overnight with the temperature in positive territory for a while. A few flurries on and off through the afternoon, nothing of any significance as far as accumulation goes. Tonight, the flurries will pick back up, and a few of those will linger into tomorrow. Could be with all this nuisance stuff and with the more significant snow showers, a centimeter or two. So we're looking at light snowfall, but we're looking at cold temperatures returning down to -17 through the day tomorrow, and then -21 tomorrow night with a mostly cloudy sky. Friday is partly to mostly cloudy, -14. Another round of snow showers and flurries coming in late Friday night into Saturday, -12. And a secondary shot of cold air comes in Sunday. We clear out. High pressure builds right overhead. but only minus 18 for the high.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 3 degrees, Swan River plus 3, Dauphin plus 2, Brandon, Show Lake, Russell, and Roblin, 0. Regina and Indian Head, minus 3, Saskatoon, minus 1. Hudson Bay is plus 2, Broadview, Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 2. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west-northwest wind at 54, gusting to 63 kilometers an hour. 85% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 0, with the wind chill it feels more like minus 8 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of plus 1 degree, and the low was minus 22 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 12. The normal low is minus 23. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:43 this morning, and it will set at 5:19 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures around Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Swan River at minus 1 degree. The cold spot was Lynn Lake at minus 34 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Loon Lake at plus 7 degrees. The cold spot Collins Bay at minus 30 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Saskatchewan's Minister of Agriculture is seeking another meeting with his federal and provincial counterparts to discuss agri-stability. Ottawa is pushing for a response to an offer to remove the reference margin limit and increase the compensation rate from 70 to 80%. Saskatchewan is concerned about the cost to this province and wants an adjustment to the usual 60-40 cost share. The Assistant Agriculture Deputy Minister for Policy in Saskatchewan, Paul Johnson, says the province wants another meeting to discuss the issue.
Not a lot's changed, really, since Canada and Minister Bibeau made that proposal to provinces in late November. At the current state, we continue to consider that federal proposal, and we'll respond as soon as we're able to and as soon as we're ready to do that.
Any idea when that might be?
No, not sure. I mean, it's not just Saskatchewan. I'll say that there's a number of other provinces haven't responded as well. So the federal minister has asked for provinces to respond by the end of January. Not sure if we're going to be able to do that, if we'll be finished our work by then. Also recognizing that the agri-stability deadline for 2021 for producers to enroll is coming up. So it will be well in advance of the agri-stability deadline.
So you're saying that you hope to have an answer by this spring?
Oh, absolutely. We'll have an answer, a response to the federal proposals well in advance of that, yeah.
Bibeau wants a response by the end of this month so that the program can be retroactive to 2020. Do you see that as a possibility?
Well, that's one of the outstanding questions that's still there. You know, will it be retroactive to 2020, or is it just going forward? And at one point, we were advised that it could not be retroactivity because we did not have decisions in place by the end of December. So that's one of the still outstanding questions. That's one of the reasons why we're still continuing to evaluate this. Obviously, there's cost implications. So that's one of the details that's still at play here that we need to iron out with the federal government.
Does the cost of the program remain a big stumbling block for Saskatchewan?
Yeah, absolutely. Cost is a major factor for us. I mean, I don't want to overestimate the cost issues. They're real for Saskatchewan, given the current state of the economy. But we also realize there's benefits to our industry, and very, very important. We're very committed to enhance the business risk management programming and to provide adequate support for our large agriculture sector. But certainly cost is a major consideration for the province.
Are you hoping to have another minister's meeting before you make a decision?
Well, that's exactly what we're hoping for. And a matter of fact, Minister Merritt has sent a formal letter to Minister Bibeault last week on January 14th requesting that she reconvene a meeting with her FPT ministers from across the country. And, you know, that's when further discussion will take place. And that, I think, is the pathway towards decision-making, not just for Saskatchewan, but for a number of other jurisdictions.
Paul Johnson is the Assistant Agriculture Deputy Minister for Policy in Saskatchewan. It's now 12:25 on GX on Agriculture, and we'll return right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The North American wheat market outlook for the rest of the crop year is positive, due in part to a Russian wheat export tax and quota designed to curb domestic food inflation. Moscow has set up a 25 euro per metric ton export tax for the second half of February, which is expected to double in March. Marlena Borsch is a market analyst with Mercantile Venture Consulting.
North American wheat has actually become much more competitive in the world markets. Actually, we are no longer, depending on what type of wheat you look at, more expensive than, for example, the Eastern European wheat. So our access to the market has improved. And our market share is actually improving, which is absolutely stellar. We're also having some political interference, if you want, in that Russia has established an export quota on wheat at 17.5 million tons. It's designed to actually lower prices inland for the domestic market in Russia to keep bread prices down. That's what President Putin would like to achieve, and the first issue of export taxes hasn't achieved that.
Borsch says better domestic grain transportation is also helping Canada.
We can say that the international demand is there on the wheat. In our mind, it's a function of the higher Railka supply this year, keeping up elevator efficiency and perhaps lowering the discrepancy between international prices and country bids to make it attractive for you to sell. Prices are very good, and they promise very good returns for next year as well, because when you draw down stocks across the board on wheat, if we can maintain the export pace, that puts you in a much better starting position for next year as well. I think throughout 2021, we will have some very good values to work with, both on oilseeds and grain products.
The latest statistics show Canadian wheat exports are running 29% ahead of last year's pace, which works out to more than an additional 2 million metric tons.
I think we have a good chance to continue a good pace if we have continued access to the rail transportation, which has been tremendously important to have that extra capacity available. We have always said that if we can expand that bottleneck for the Canadian markets, we will actually improve our position in the export markets. And this year's example certainly seems to validate that statement.
Borsch looks at some of the bigger buyers of Canadian wheat.
We have done very well into China, Peru, Indonesia, and the U.S. These are some of the market drivers, and I should include into that Nigeria as well. If you were to prorate the exports to date into the full crop year, we actually end up with 21.2 million tons versus 19.8 million tons. So I think we can do a little bit better than 19.8. I don't think we'll reach the 21.2, but we certainly have set a very good early pace.
The top five Canadian wheat customers through the end of November are China at 958,000 metric tons, Indonesia at 809,000 metric tons, Peru 693,000 metric tons, Japan 537,000 metric tons, and the United States at 514,000 metric tons. Borsch made her comments during the online CropSphere event last week. It's now 12:30 on GX on Agriculture, and it's time to check the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX 94, AgriView.
The latest market outlook from Sask Wheat says Canadian wheat exports are running 29% ahead of last year at this date. Total wheat exports are running 2 million metric tons higher than last year at this time. Compiled by Mercantile Consulting Venture, the outlook says farm deliveries of wheat were high at 600,000 metric tons in week 23, reflecting improved prices. International projections point to record wheat production this year, and despite higher consumption, further increases in global stocks. However, the stocks will be centered on China and India, while exporter stocks will drop by another 1 million metric tons. Above average wheat trade is expected this year, but may not reach last year's record. The outlook advises farmers to continue to hold wheat for the present. Wheat prices are expected to slow down this week after gaining 29 cents a bushel in Minneapolis last week. Support for wheat prices came from a USDA stocks report and a Russian export tax story. Russia is expected to impose a 25 euro per metric ton export tax starting on February 15th and increasing to 50 euros on March 1st. A euro is about $1.50 Canadian. Canadian durum exports total so far this crop year at 2.2 million metric tons, 13% or 236,000 metric tons ahead of last year's pace. Farm deliveries were high at 147,000 metric tons. The outlook would target $9 a bushel for additional durum sales. Dairy farmers wanting to get in on a three-year, $1.405 billion federal compensation program for market share loss to free trade deals must register for the program by March 31st in each of those years. Federal Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau has laid out further specifics for the Dairy Direct Payment Program, which is set to start in the 2020-2021 program year, with direct cash payouts totaling $468 million. But to get their 2020-2021 payments, eligible dairy farmers will have to register with the program's administrator, the Canadian Dairy Commission, by March 31st this year, and then re-register again by the same date in 2022 and 2023 to be eligible for payments in those program years. The CDC says it will collect information from provincial milk marketing boards on licensed quota holders, then calculate those quota holders' individual payments based on the percentage of each producer's provincial quota holdings. These direct payments are meant to clear out a $1.75 billion federal compensation package announced in August of 2019 for supply-managed dairy farmers' market share lost in Canada's multilateral trade deals with the European Union and Trans-Pacific Partnership trade bloc. East Central Alberta's Lakeland College is set to offer what's billed as Canada's first degree program in agriculture technology as a two-year post-credential program starting in September. The program will consist of full-time studies at Lakeland's campus at Vermilion, plus experiential learning practicums off-campus en route to a Bachelor of Agriculture Technology degree. The program is meant to bridge the gap between emerging technologies and agricultural management and production systems. Those enrolled in the program are to study smart agriculture as a management system, including data collection and analysis, as well as interpretive tools and programs such as robotics, geospatial tools, and artificial intelligence, as well as how to analyze and troubleshoot industry-leading hardware, software, and data platforms. Students on campus are to work on the college's student-managed farm and at a new 8,000-square-foot ag technology center, an on-farm lab that's expected to be open later this year. Students' practicums, meanwhile, are to be done at ag data companies, technology and equipment manufacturers, dealerships, crop input service providers, agronomist service companies, crop and livestock service centers, farms, breeding and genomic companies, among other operations. It's expected that graduates of the program will be able to find work in assorted ag-related fields, such as in data services, development, management, precision technology, production, research, or sales with ag tech companies, research organizations, or equipment dealerships. And that is the AgriView portion of our program. It's now 12:36 on GX and Agriculture, and we'll return right after this. Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's cloudy and zero in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Yesterday's launch of Climate West signals another opportunity for people on the prairies to access supports related to climate change. The nonprofit regional hub aims to deliver information and data across the prairie provinces generated by climate change. Terry Duguid with the Government of Canada says Climate West will help Canadians become more resilient in the face of a changing climate.
Once we defeat COVID-19, we will need to focus on building our communities back better and more resilient than ever before. That's how we can create a safer, cleaner, and healthier future for our kids and grandkids here in the Prairie Provinces and across the country.
Duguid added that the federal government is committed just under $2 million over the next 3 years to support Climate West. A number of collaborators are involved in the creation of Climate West, including the Prairie Adaptation Research Collaborative, or PARC, a climate change research center at the University of Regina. The U of R's Dr. Thomas Chase says it's a proud moment for PARC to be a part of this journey.
Through this new partnership, the University of Regina will help build a multi-institution, multi-government collaboration for the meaningful application of research from our university. PARC's experience and expertise will help Climate West build climate resilience across the prairie provinces and spur demand for climate services in the region.
According to PARC, the prairie provinces have witnessed 13 of Canada's 20 most expensive weather-related events since 1983. It's now 12:38 on GX on Agriculture.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 113.42. That's up 10. April live cattle trading at 118.87, down 47. March feeder cattle trading at 137.32, up 52. April feeder cattle trading at 140.47, up 87. February lean hogs trading at 67.92, up 145. April lean hogs trading at 72.85, up 142. And that's the livestock market conditions. It's now 12:39 on GX and Agriculture. And studying your yield and your cereal crop protein content from this past harvest can help you determine your nutrient plan for this coming crop season. Retired Yorkton agronomist Tom Weir says it's a way to maximize your yield potential.
Well, yeah, it's an opportunity for growers to take a look and sort of use it as a measurement of their last year's fertilization, specifically nitrogen. So nitrogen has a lot of importance on what the protein value of wheat is, hard red wheat specifically. So by taking a look at it and seeing where your protein is, you can do a pretty good job in judging how good of a job you did matching your nitrogen to where you wanted to be.
So the key is to look at your yield and your protein content from last year's harvest.
Yeah, so basically what happens is wheat is able to partition its nitrogen based on trying to produce the maximum yield of that of the crop based on the nitrogen and the moisture that's available. And once it's achieved the maximum yield, the rest of the nitrogen goes to protein. So the theory is, and it's been researched and proven pretty factual, is that point where the nitrogen is no longer put into the yield and goes into protein is approximately 13.5%. So if you take a look at your wheat yield and take a look at the protein. Now, if the protein is at 13.5, that's an indication that you basically got all the yield out of that crop that you could based on the moisture that you had. If your protein is 14.5, that's an indication that your crop yield, you got the maximum yield out of it, but you also had some extra nitrogen that went into the protein. And looking on the other side, if your protein was 12.5, that's an indication that you under-fertilized the nitrogen on that crop for the optimum yield. You actually backed off a little bit on the potential yield with the moisture you had.
It sounds like moisture is the most important variable that needs to be considered.
That's right. There's three things that go into protein, or three major things. One is nitrogen, second is moisture, and third, the variety that you're growing does have a little bit of impact on it. But yeah, in a drier year, your protein goes up. In a wetter year, your protein goes down because of that fluctuation on that the maximum yield you can get out of the crop.
And you also take into consideration an age-old principle concerning yield potential.
Liebig's Law. Yeah, that was a law that was theorized in the 1600s by a German early nutrient researcher. And so his theory, which is pretty accurate, is that the maximum yield of a crop is limited by the most limiting growth factor, which would include your nutrients, but it would also include water. So you can have, for instance, lots of nitrogen, phosphate, potassium, micros, sulfur, all those nutrients, but if you don't have enough water, the water's going to limit the growth of that crop. So, and likewise, if you have an ample water and ample of everything else except for nitrogen, the amount of nitrogen that you have available is going to dictate the yield of that crop.
Can this nutrient plan be used when it comes to crops besides wheat?
It does with barley. With barley, actually, it's a bit of a, with wheat, we want protein. With this malting barley especially, we don't want protein. We want to, the maltsters want to have less protein because protein will cause cloudy beer. So when you're growing malting barley, you don't want to try and get to that point where you've maximized your yield or there's potential you'll end up with a protein level that's going to cause your malt barley to be rejected. The level is less in barley, it's less in winter wheat, and they haven't been as researched as much as hard red spring wheat, so it's a little hard to I'd be stepping out on a limb if I said 11% is the magic number for barley. It's probably around there someplace between 10% and 12%, but it just hasn't been researched as finely as hard red spring wheat.
So a nutrient plan isn't as simple as determining your yield and your protein content.
You mentioned moisture, so that, because that's a big factor. If, say, this past year a grower had 13.5 protein, if next year, if he's speculating that the moisture is going to be the same, then his nitrogen that he used next year should be pretty close to giving him the optimum yield. But if he's saying, I think the moisture is going to be a lot more, then he probably wants to increase his nitrogen rate because the optimum or the maximum yield is going to be higher than it was this year. So there's a lot more that sort of that goes on behind the scenes, because each year is different. The other thing is, he should always do some soil testing to find out where he is in his residual nitrogen.
And is there anything you would like to add?
Other than I think it's a tool that can be utilized that goes farther than just wheat. Because if your nitrogen fertility program is relatively the same for other crops like, say, canola, then you can then use it to estimate, if I'm coming in around 13.5 protein, I'm probably pretty close to my optimizing my canola, understanding that canola probably takes about 30% more nitrogen to reach that optimum or yield. So it can be used to relatively determine how you're doing on other crops.
Tom Weir is a retired agronomist based in Yorkton. It's now 12:47 on GX and Agriculture, and I'll have your commodities update right after this.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading down across the board this hour. March canola trading at $656.80, down $7.40. May canola trading at $641.50, down $5.10. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.39 per bushel, down 4.5 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $6.39¾, down 4.25 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $6.70 per bushel, down 2.25 cents. March corn trading at $5.24 per bushel, down 2 cents. March soybeans trading at $13.73¾, down 12 cents. March oats trading at $3.63¼, up 0.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. The Canadian Pork Council is reminding pork producers, particularly small-scale backyard producers, of the risks posed by feeding kitchen scraps to pigs. The global spread of African swine fever has heightened the risk to North America, increasing the need for ongoing biosecurity. Dr. Egan Brockhoff, the Veterinary Counsel with the Canadian Pork Council and a member of the Swine Innovation Pork Coordinated African Swine Fever Research Working Group, updates us on the spread of the virus.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think as many people are aware now, the virus has moved more extensively throughout Germany. More wild boar have been found dead and found to be positive for the virus, and that has had a massive disruption to their trade of pork and pork products, which is extremely unfortunate. Reports that the virus continues to move throughout Asia and continuing to cause mortality and disruptions throughout Asia, throughout Eastern Europe. The risk continues to grow as more and more countries become infected.
What possible vectors for introduction of the virus into North America pose the greatest risk?
Well, we're still very worried about international travelers coming into Canada and bringing illegal meat products with them during their trip. I think, as most people are aware, there's still many people that are able to travel to Canada, and that risk remains very real. Potential feed ingredients that are sourced from countries positive for African swine fever remain a risk. Thankfully, we have mitigation measures in place for that. But that illegal movement of meat products still concerns us as much as anything.
When it comes to feed ingredients, what do producers need to be considering when accessing feed?
Yeah, so when we're talking about feed and feed ingredients, we really want people to be aware of where they're sourcing their products. Are they from a country that is free of African swine fever? Are they from a country that is positive for African swine fever? Whether it be your soy product or your vitamins and minerals, we want everyone to consider that. Does your feed mill practice or participate in a biosecurity program? Are they part of the Canadian Feed Assure program? Another really important factor. We want to remind people, though, that if they have pigs, maybe they're smallholder producers, we want to remind people, all people, that in Canada, under the Health of Animals Act, we're not permitted to feed meat or meat byproducts or food that is suspected to contain meat or meat byproducts to swine or poultry, for that matter. And I think that's a real critical issue to remind people all the time.
How might meat or meat byproducts be included in a diet?
Yeah, so because the Health of Animal Act prohibits the feeding of meat or meat byproducts, we don't have any of those moving through our commercial feed mills or any of our commercially available feed products. Where this may occur is if someone is feeding kitchen scraps to their animals. And, pigs are a great recycler, if you will. They're great for cleaning up your garden, excess garden. But a lot of people forget that we're not allowed to feed the kitchen meat scraps to them. And so constantly have to be reminding people not to feed meat and meat byproducts to their pigs.
How have producers responded to the call?
Yeah, I think pig owners, livestock producers have responded very favorably to this. They want to protect the health of Canada's pig herd. They want to protect the viability of their family farm and the pork sector. And so, people are extremely cooperative when it comes to doing things like this, following the Health of Animals Act to ensure that we're not putting our animals at risk and putting our farm families at risk. So I would have to say, in general, people have been very supportive. But it is interesting. I get people sending me notes almost every day that say they weren't aware that we're not allowed to feed meat or meat byproducts to our pigs here in Canada. So I think it's good to keep pushing that message forward.
In the event of African swine fever entering North America, and specifically Canada, what would the consequences potentially be?
Well, I think the consequences would be extremely concerning. If the virus certainly found its way into Canada, almost immediately, most all of our trading partners around the world would likely shut off exports of Canadian pork to their country. And so we do have bilateral trade agreement, a zoning agreement with the United States, that once we establish where the infected animals are and we contain those animals, they would accept our zone. But the rest of our trading partners around the world, throughout Southeast Asia, we don't have trade agreements with them around zoning. And so the general consensus is, if we look at what's happened to Germany and Belgium before that, we would lose access to many of our key markets overnight. And that's extremely concerning and would cause massive disruption to the pork sector, including market surplus of animals. And then we have, 99% of the healthy herd that doesn't have access to a market. And that would be extremely stressful.
What strategies are being developed to minimize disruptions and limit economic loss in the event African swine fever is identified in Canada?
Yeah, so both industry and government are working extremely close on this. Industry is in the process of putting together a new biosecurity standard for pork producers that are on the Canadian Quality Assurance Program. we're building tools and helping with education for smallholder producers to help them become aware of biosecurity and how they can keep disease out. Canada, the government of Canada continues to work on zoning agreements with some of our key trading partners. The Canadian Pork Council and the CFIA are working on a compartmentalization program that would allow us to do peacetime surveillance and monitoring for the disease. And then in the event of a foreign animal disease like African swine fever, we would be able to maintain trade because the compartment would remain intact and free of disease. And so a lot of work going on with planning and preparedness for these diseases, response and recovery in the face of the disease, and ensuring business continuity for farms, farm families, and the entire sector.
How prepared is Canada at this point?
You know, Canada has been working very hard on this file the last few years. And so I would say we've made a lot of very good progress around our planning and preparedness. We still have a lot of challenges. We're not adequately resourced across the country. We've got a lot of people doing a lot of great work, but we're not adequately resourced to deal with the market surplus. Those, the 95% of healthy animals that no longer have access to market, that's a big challenge we're really worried about. We need to see more done with wild pigs. You know, this is a potential risk factor for us right now. They're a healthy group of animals, but they're an invasive species, and we really want to see that group eradicated. We've got lots of work still to do to help small-scale producers with animal health, understanding biosecurity, and just minimizing the risk of disease and disease transmission. And so a lot of great work has been done, but we still have lots in front of us.
Dr. Egan Brockhoff is the Veterinary Counsel with the Canadian Pork Council and a member of the Swine Innovation Pork Coordinated African Swine Fever Research Working Group. It's now 1 o'clock on GX on Agriculture, and it's time to check the GX 94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions, a wind warning remains in effect. For today, cloudy with a 40% chance of flurries, winds west-northwest at 30 to 60 and gusting even higher, the temperature falling to minus 3. For tonight, cloudy, a 30% chance of flurries, winds northwest at 20 to 40, a low of minus 12. Tomorrow, cloudy with a 30% chance of flurries, winds west-northwest at 15 to 25, the temperature falling to minus 17. For Friday, partly to mainly cloudy, winds west-northwest at 15 to 25, a high of minus 14. Saturday, a 30% chance of flurries, a high of minus 12. And Sunday, a mix of sun and cloud, a high of minus 18. In the Paw, it's minus 3 degrees, Swan River plus 3, Dauphin plus 2, Brandon, Show Lake Russell, and Roblin 0. Regina and Indian Head minus 3, Saskatoon minus 1, Hudson Bay plus 2, Broadview Mooseman, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 2. The Yorkton Melville region has a cloudy sky, a west-northwest wind at 54, gusting to 63 kilometers an hour. 85% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 0. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 8 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX 94.